Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse, Anton Yelchin. Oh, what do all these people have in common?
27.
That's right. They were members of the 27 Club. And why am I mentioning this? Because this is the 27th episode of Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where each episode we select a horror film with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb and try to determine whether it's a horror gem or not, or a turd, which happens occasionally. Sometimes we dig up a turd. So on this day of our 27th episode, I pose this question. Is this podcast doomed to overdose, blow its brains out, self-immolate, and auto-erotically asphyxiate all at the same time? I guess we, and you, dear listeners, will find out for certain if a 28th episode drops in 2 weeks. And if that happens, we shall go on forever.
Yes!
This is a lot of pressure.
I'm scared.
And with that, my name is Cody, and I feel like getting wrecked.
I'm Beth, and I have a tiny lavender mind.
I'm Buggy, and a bird in the hand is better than a bush in the bush.
Exactly. That's what I've been saying.
Always.
Yeah.
Okay, so fortunately, it sounds like the protests were mostly peaceful this weekend. Woo! I wish I could have been there. Buggy, did you go?
I wanted to, but no King's Day when it was happening downtown. I was working the entire time, which sucked. But I saw a lot of cute old people with really fun signs, and that was nice. They did make my day very hard, but shout out them for going down there.
Having to go to work. Yeah. I had cousins' weekend instead, which is a different kind of like community building. Hung out with 8 of my female cousins, and we're all on the same page about stuff. And everyone will go out into the world and make the world better. And that is also a form of whatever, right?
I think we all failed, and we're part of the problem.
But we've been in every other, you know, like. But we're here. We're there.
That's true. But
we're everywhere.
Also, on the positive side. We blew Trump's birthday parade out of the water.
Birthday, okay.
Every city showed up 10 times more than the people who showed up to his weird military parade, and that is a great thing.
I heard he took a little snoozer too.
Probably. It's a minor accomplishment, but it is great.
I take snoozers sometimes.
At your military parade?
His birthday sucked. Sucked butt.
Exactly.
I hope he's in a lot of pain all the time.
I am.
Well, that's not what I hope for.
Well, I had the house to myself this weekend, so I watched 4 horror movies.
Oh.
They were all kind of new. Is anyone interested in hearing what I watched?
What are they?
Tell us.
I watched Exuma, which is a Korean film, and it gets kind of ridiculous. It's about like haunted grave sites, but it was mostly good. I watched Frogman, which is a found footage thing. Not the best thing I've ever seen, but it was charming in its own way. I watched You Are Not My Mother, which is an Irish film, and it was probably the most unsettling of all 4 movies.
Do I want to watch that then?
What?
You Are Not My Mother.
You might, yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty good. And then I watched The Soul Eater, which is a French film by Alexandre Bastillo and Julien Maury, who brought you such films as Inside, Livid, and Among the Living, and many more. It was kind of like a True Detective type thing.
Oh, fun.
A murder mystery type of deal, kid torture. I don't know. It was, I would say that there weren't any of the movies I watched this weekend that I hated. They were all worth watching, I guess.
Nice, that's good. Did you watch anything this weekend? This movie? No, you watched it on time, actually.
I did, actually. I watched it on time. I mainly just watched the things I usually watch, I think. That's really all I've been doing.
The Nanny?
No, I finished that. Just How I Met Your Mother, which is a terrible dated
back to
show.
That,
but
that old,
I love
that
it.
Old chestnut or whatever.
I love
they
call that it. Chestnut. It's rich.
Ew. All right, so we have a movie to talk about. This was my movie that I selected. It's called The Black Room, released in 1982, which is also when I was released.
From the womb.
From jail. It was directed by Ellie Kenner and Norman Thaddeus Vane, which is a great name, then I'm going to say it like that throughout the rest of the episode.
That's a great name,
yeah. It was written by Norman Thaddeus Vane, starring Clara Perryman as Robin, Jimmy Stathis as Larry, Cassandra Gava as Bridget, who apparently was a witch in Conan the Barbarian.
That,
no way.
You know, yeah. She did look kind of familiar, and I've seen that movie a lot, so that makes sense.
She does have a very, like, distinctive mug.
Yeah.
We got Stephen Knight as Jason. Christopher McDonald as Terry. That's Shooter McGavin.
Shooter McGavin.
He was featured in our last episode as well. We'll talk about him a bit later. Linnea Quigley as Millie. We'll talk about her later also. She has popped up on multiple episodes of Gem Hunt throughout the, I don't know.
The 27th.
The year we've been doing it. Mm-hmm. The music was done by James Ackley and Art Podel. I don't know. Interesting electronic music in this.
I'd say Podel.
Yeah.
That's probably
Podel.
Wrong.
Art Podel. That sounds about right. Where can you watch this bag of piss? It's on FlixFling, Troma Now, Prime Video, Fandango at Home, Plex, and Fossum again. Oh. Fossum is popping up everywhere.
It's fucking awesome.
We rented the Blu-ray for Movie Madness and hauled our Blu-ray player up to Olympia and watched this in a hotel room, which was fun.
It was so fun. It was the first time I could see my notes while I was taking notes. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, we have to keep
not
our living
darkness.
Room. Yeah, a living room has to be dark because of the projector, which makes it hard to write notes. And we could do something like buy little clip-on lights that we have not done.
Headlamps.
Headlamps. Okay, what's this son of a bitch about? This is a movie about fucking. And so obviously,
yeah,
it opens with fucking.
It does.
We see two people getting busy in a very strange and elaborate dark room adorned with candelabras. So many candelabras. Ridiculous amount
of candelabras. It's kind of stressful. I'm like, how is that place not on fire?
On fire, yeah. I thought that too.
So during the fucking, the camera takes a quick break to explore the house, which definitely gives the opening sequence a bit of an 80s slasher vibe. And suddenly we see someone spying on the people fucking, who then enters the room with a nefarious syringe, and bam, they're dead and being buried in the backyard by a couple clad in black. This is the setup for what suddenly becomes an interesting relationship drama involving Larry and Robin and their troubled love life. Apparently, they're not doing the business as much as they used to, and they have these kids that seem to interrupt them every time they have a chance. And so Larry begins to search the classifieds ads for a room to rent. At first, you don't know if he's planning on moving out or something else, but once he finds his place advertised as a luxury room for $200 a month, we discover that Larry is just looking for a fuck pad so he can pick up young co-eds from the local college. And it turns out the room he is renting is the Black Room. The same ominous candlelit room we saw moments ago in the opening sequence. And there are some titular lines involving the Black Room in this movie, so ring the titular line bell. Ding, ding, ding. The room is being rented by two eccentrics named Jason and Bridget, who may or may not be lovers, or maybe brother and sister. Seems like we've run into this conundrum before. We don't know at this point. We'll find out later. Larry starts picking up chicks and taking them back to the Black Room, and we discover that Jason and Bridget are freaky voyeurs, and they take blackmail-y photos of anyone that brings a fuck buddy to the Black Room, and they may be up to something as well. Maybe murder. So things start to get complicated after Larry is stood up by a date and instead begins to converse with Bridget, which leads to a completely wild sex scene involving body paint and Bridget riding Larry like a bull, like on his back, not his dick. And I don't even know if this is technically a sex scene. So despite developing a connection with Bridget, Larry continues bringing whores back to the Black Room. And next up, he's got Sandy, who he ties up and blindfolds and then suddenly has to run out to a meeting and leaves her like that. Shit gets a bit creepy at this point, and we get a better sense that Jason and Bridget are up to something sinister. So Larry returns, and he's like, oh, shucks, my whore's gone. And meanwhile, Jason and Bridget have Sandy connected to a machine which is transferring her blood into Jason. Like, maybe Jason is actually a vampire, but he uses medical devices instead of good old-fashioned blood-sucking. Or maybe he just has that blood disease. We'll find out. At this point, we learn that Larry's into some kinky shit, but he doesn't want to do it with his wife, even though his wife is game and she informs him of this in language that is plain as day.
Larry?
What, honey?
Why don't you do to me what you said you did to that girl that you took to that black room?
Come on. I couldn't do that to you. It wouldn't be right. You're my wife.
I don't want to be your wife when we make love. I want to be your whore.
Christopher McDonald shows up as a character named Terry that wants to watch Larry bang his girlfriend for some weird reason, like a thesis statement. I don't know why you would want to do that for a college paper, but anyways, people like to talk about getting wrecked a lot, which is fun. I'm going to bring that slang back, which is basically just, that means partying, I guess. Larry's wife, Robin, who up until this point assumed all of the black room nonsense was just Larry's weird fantasy, which he does tell her about this on a regular basis. She discovers that no, actually he is banging broads in the black room, and so she goes to investigate, gets involved with Jason, Bridget, and bangs Terry, and everything becomes very messy. Larry is big mad, more people get sucked by the blood machine, and it becomes clear that Jason has plans to find some kids to drain on his blood machine, because the younger, the better, apparently.
Doy.
Finally, Linnea Quigley shows up for her cameo as a babysitter named Millie, who delivers Larry and Robin's kids to the Bloodhouse, and this sets up the big climax, and I won't give anything else away other than to note that Jason and Bridget are very hard to kill. Did I miss anything? Any other important notes about the story?
I think that's pretty good, but yeah, right?
That was good. That was very, like, concise. I just want to mention that Larry is so stupid and left a newspaper cutout circled in a red Sharpie with the room to rent for that fucking place, for that house.
And I want to say, as you were saying Larry and Terry, I was thinking about Chuck and Buck. So I was trying to think. So how about Larry and Terry lie and die?
I like it.
And like Chuck and Buck suck and fuck.
I don't even know about them. Feel bad for me.
Larry and Terry. One of the most awkward quotes from any movie of all time. And, or moments, I guess.
Oh, wait, sorry.
Fucking Robin and Jason do it also.
Do they?
They do it.
I think so, too. I have that in my notes, and I think they allude to when she goes to investigate, they do.
No, he's like, well, you know, Larry does it, so why don't we do it? And then they do. They just don't show it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought he was just trying to talk
her into, could bring a boy or something. Yeah. But I wrote in my notes they boned. Do it too. So I think
they bumped uglies.
Maybe that's something to...
For interesting.
Gross, dude.
It's just that's what happened.
How can he pull that off with his jalapeno disease?
I don't know. We'll talk about that.
Maybe you have to take a couple breaks.
All right. One more note. The budget for this film was $40,000. So
pretty
low budget movie. And it doesn't seem that... seem like that. So one thing I tried to emphasize in the recap is the amount of banging and relationship drama that takes place in this film. So much so that I thought it would be worth debating whether or not this film could be described as an erotic thriller rather than a horror film. And we've tackled this issue on other episodes, including episode 1, where we reviewed Heart of Midnight. I think we talked about it there. And maybe Welcome to Arrow Beach? I can't remember.
Well, I think we talked about what the fuck genre and, you know, because that movie, and now we know maybe it was cut so much that we didn't even see the real movie. Yeah.
And maybe another episode, too. I know we've talked about erotic thrillers before. Mm-hmm. So this is another one. So how would you categorize The Black Room? Is it one or the other or both?
I'm going to say it's a horror movie.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if it's an erotic thriller just because there's a lot of sex, but it's not really shown that much. Like, it's not shown in full. And I feel like
it's not that graphic.
Like, erotic thrillers, like, the central theme is like there's a lot of boobs and there's a lot of full frontal nudity. Do you know what I mean?
No,
like,
I do. There are a lot of candles in this, though.
There are a lot of candles, which does give it points towards eroticism for sure. I just don't know because the whole central point of it revolves around boning too, which, you know, that kind of makes me like lean towards it could be, but I think it is like a horror film more than anything, an erotic horror film, if you will.
There you go. So maybe that's the hybrid. What do you think?
That could be. I think it ultimately becomes a horror film, but for a large chunk of it, it feels more like some kind of erotic thriller to me.
Like in the middle where it's all like seeking partners to come to the black room and that sort of shit.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. It like kind of drags on that for a while where it's almost like, is this a horror movie or just like a weird, creepy thing with people banging?
And like photographing people banging.
Yeah. So I saw one interesting quote that states, writer and co-director Norman Thaddeus Vane can't help but bring a little horror to this tale of property and perversion. But accidental or not, he more helps establish the template for a phenomenon of the following decade, the straight-to-cable video erotic thriller.
Okay, so it's like a,
it's almost like, maybe not quite there, but sort of like a preamble to that subgenre, which became very popular in the late 80s and definitely in the early 90s, I think.
Yeah.
Could be. Anyways, this is kind of an erotic film. I think you guys are right. Probably more horror film than straight up erotic thriller.
Just because of how it ends, which, again, we don't want to like totally spoil, because that's the ending is kind of what made me like it. But yeah, I think that tips it. I think the ending tips it to horror.
Yeah.
For sure.
The beginning is all, like, ooh, you know, candles and fucking. Yeah. And
it's a lot of action in the last, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that's a good way to, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, kind of on that topic, I want to talk about sleaze, because this film does feel kind of sleazy. And we've talked about Euro sleaze before when we reviewed Baba Yaga. But this film is very much 80s L.A. sleaze. So I want to kick this section off with a little overview of writer and co-director Norman Thaddeus Vane. I've stumbled upon a couple blog posts disgusting
me.
I've stumbled on a couple blog posts discussing Mr. Thaddeus Vane. And apparently he was interviewed in a book called Nightmare USA, which is about the history of horror and grindhouse. And this dude was a notorious playboy, party boy in the 60s and 70s, who also wrote for Penthouse magazine. And he was a playwright in the 60s, I guess, before delving into the stinky, dirty nightlife, including becoming a club owner.
The stinky, dirty nightlife?
And stinky. Yeah. The Black Room is loosely based on his real life experiences. So he was married to a 16-year-old model who he often cheated on with centerfolds at a very similar locale as the Black Room. So there is some connection there to what was actually going on with his life. So all this weird sleazy sex stuff was just, you know, what he was up to. And I found that kind of interesting. But
I have to say,
Larry,
16-year-old model, though. Fuck yeah, you, how old Norman was he? Thaddeus Vane.
How like, old what? Was he?
Yeah.
89.
No, but he probably was in his 20s, I'm guessing.
I don't know. Who knows?
That's a baby Charlie child.
Charlie Chaplin bullshit.
Yeah. Here's one more interesting quote. This is from the schlockpit.com, where the author states that the Black Room is a character-focused slow burn. And according to the writer and co-director Norman Thaddeus Vane, he was responsible for the drama. And co-director Ellie Kenner, a young Israeli talent drafted in to appease the film's chief backer, an Israeli businessman, was responsible for the look. So all of this kind of like sex drama, that was all Norman Thaddeus Vane who did that.
You didn't say it right.
What?
Norman Thaddeus Vane.
Norman Thaddeus Vane.
You said it normal, man.
Yeah. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how sleazy was this movie from your perspective?
Mild sleaze.
Mild sleaze.
I think it's so like 3?
Yeah, I feel like, like a cool 3 or 4. It's not like super sleazy. But it's like, I really think the main sleaze element, I don't know, is like the siblings and then also Larry. Larry's just a sleazy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Larry's, I mean, look. I guess maybe at least if Norman Thaddeus Vane bases on his life, he made the main, the male lead pretty unlikable. Like maybe he was
pretty
too.
Big douchebag.
Like the
man.
Wife was the likable character.
Yeah, I was really rooting for her.
Yeah.
I was kind of mad when, like, Jason was going to kill her. I was like, hey, I thought this was going to be the start of something beautiful here.
I know. They could have had it all.
They could have had it all, man.
They could have.
They could have flipped the script. But that Norman fellow, he just couldn't let it happen.
I just want to, as we were talking, you were talking about the two directors and the other one they brought in, Ellie Kenner, who was born in Israel and then made some films in the U.S. and then went back to Israel. And seems like he became like some kind of Jewish mystic, and that's what he focused on in film. And it's just interesting because his Wikipedia lists his citizenship as film. That's all I want to say. He's like a citizen of film, which I'm hoping that he made it and he did it with what's going on now. And he said, you know, what I identify with is film.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. That's a good note.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that this movie came out right before the AIDS crisis. Mm-hmm. It hadn't really started to pop off yet. So we have this interesting promiscuity component that probably became a lot more scary not long after this film, I would say.
Yeah, 1982. So, like, yeah, this is the tail end of just the worst thing that could happen as... I mean, herpes, I guess, sucks pretty bad, but most of the things you could go get penicillin for, you know?
True.
Or pregnant, obviously. The worst thing that can happen to you is to get pregnant.
It's the worst thing ever.
As I look into my daughter's eyes on Father's Day, as we're anyway.
Happy Father's Day. Don't get pregnant.
Yeah. No, yeah. But unless you want to. And we have ways now. Yeah, because I think it was like, yeah, there's this little brief stretch of time where like the pill was available and there wasn't AIDS yet. You know?
What a time.
What a time.
What a time to
but
be
it was.
Alive.
It's like Studio 54. It's like,
people,
you know,
boning.
People just
left
like
and right.
Key parties and like everyone in Hollywood, you know, being in hot tubs with 15-year-olds or I'm not
that
really
still happens.
I'm not going there. Of course it's still happening,
it's still
but like
going on.
Just it being more like the culture of like, yeah, people are just fucking.
Yeah, we bone.
I managed to not get AIDS or get anyone pregnant as a newborn infant in 1982.
Wow, dude.
Oh my God.
Gotta be a first.
Congrats.
I think I did a pretty good job. Misogyny. Let's talk about it. So okay. We mentioned that Larry is a cheating sleazeball, and he gets particularly upset with his wife, Robin, when she engages in the same behavior just because she found out that that's what he's been up to.
Will I do it again? I don't know. I don't know. Will you?
If I give up this stupid game, will you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not sure. I feel like a different woman.
Will you give me a break, Ron?
Can I go on?
Oh, yeah. You can go on. You can go on out the door and out of my life. And take the kids with you.
Come on, Larry. You started this.
So, were there any other key examples of misogyny in this movie other than kind of the weird relationship between Larry and Robin and the kind of unfair imbalance of he gets to do this, but it's some kind of big shocking thing when she does it?
I have one, but I kind of want to focus on their relationship because
she
is, you know, from the very beginning, you know, they're trying to have sex. The kids are... bothering them, which
Mommy,
of course
I peed the bed, literally.
It's her job to go deal with it, and then
always.
He's mad that and she's like still ready to have sex. He's like, oh, you know,
I can't anymore,
and then she's obviously like down to try things, and he's just like, you're my wife, you know.
Well, he's also
I mean that's basically it. Like she is she's also really hot. She's like hot. This hot, beautiful, smart woman who's like, what do you want to do? I'll do it. And he's like, that's for whores. You're my wife. That is the Larry Robin thing. Yeah, do you want to add to it?
Yeah, I mean, on the same vein of like their relationship, it's just also, it's so, the way he treats the kids and like his role with the children and like his role like as a husband is just so bullshit. Like he barely does anything. Like, he's always like, oh, mom's mad again about blah, 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 because he's the fucking turd.
Yeah.
And, like, he doesn't do anything. He gets to be, like, fun dad who
he has
is
some
sleaze.
Sort of a job.
He has
he
a job.
Yeah, I don't know what his job is.
They don't really, like, get into his job. He just, like, has one.
He's like, I have to go to the office.
I have jobs.
You know? There's more to, like, the way, you know, Sandy, who's the prostitute, the way she's treated. And then, I don't think this is a spoiler. There's a scene towards the end where, is it Sandy? Someone is almost escapes.
I think that's Lisa, Terry's girlfriend, that almost escapes.
Someone almost escapes, it's that, and they
it's
run.
It's the same prostitute. It's the prostitute.
Is it?
Yeah. It's
Well, they run into a truck driver on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And she almost gets saved. And then they're like, oh, no, she's just, you know, like a dizzy broad. Don't worry about it.
No,
and
Jason's I found like, that. Don't worry about
it. It's
her.
Kind of like, it's upsetting. But it's also, yeah, it's just that, like, oh, we have her. It's under control, you know.
She's crazy. Don't worry about her. Like, we got it. I'm a man telling another man.
Yeah, two men talking about this woman who's.
Look how crazy she is, dude. You can tell. I mean, there's blood coming out of her neck and she's. Deadly pale.
Look at her.
You can tell.
She does this all the time.
She's fine. She's doing just fine, man. Let us take her back up this hill she fell down.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Does the man in the room, did you notice any other misogynistic?
No, I think you covered the key ones, but the thing I was pondering is whether or not this movie was saying anything about misogyny or if it just happened to be part of the storyline.
I think it's weird knowing that that guy was married to a 16-year-old that he made the wife so much more sympathetic than the husband, I have to say. That's kind of interesting to me that, like maybe it was an apology.
Could be, yeah.
Because the idea that, like, he based it on him and he made that character very unlikable.
But you'd be surprised how much people lack self-awareness. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what? Who knows? Maybe he saw Larry as like the hero.
Right, and maybe it just came out of his subconscious.
Because it could just be like, because also it is presented like Larry is the hero at the end of the day. Like, he gets them out of there. They're together still. You know? That's kind of the vibe I got.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they're like, we're together.
You think that's how it ends?
And we love each other.
Okay.
I don't know, because I don't remember how it ends.
Well, that's a great way, because it's ambiguous, so we're not going to say any more about it. Yeah,
that's true. Okay, we talked about misogyny, we talked about sleaze, we talked about erotic thrillers. Let's talk about vampire shit, because this may or may not be a vampire film, depending on how you look at it. Yeah. Here's another quote from the Schlock Pit article by Maddie Budrowicz.
You're doing great.
This is a tough one. Maddie Budrowicz. I think I'm going with that. So, in The Black Room, blood sucking is allegorically employed for more grown-up reasons, as a means to explore the complexities of relationships, monogamy, and promiscuity, post-free love, but pre-AIDS. And I feel like that's kind of a good description of the story that unfolds in this film.
Totally.
Yeah. So, without spoiling too much, do you think this is a vampire film?
Yes.
And why?
The blood is life. The preying on people.
Yeah.
This is probably a good moment for me to talk about what thalassemia actually is. Because one of my friends has it. It's a kind of anemia, like sickle cell, but I don't think as life. It just means that it's not as life-threatening. It happens to people of like Greek descent. And it means you're tired and pale. It doesn't shorten your lifespan or make you weak or need blood transfusions. So anyway, that's just a cover.
Jason's been sick all his life. Ever since he was a child.
What does he have?
Oh, it's a very rare blood disease. Colleus anemia. The medical term is thalassemia. It affects mostly Mediterranean types. Your red blood cells are different. So he has to constantly replenish his blood every 60 days, then once a month. Now it's twice weekly.
So yeah, I think without getting into too much of what happens at the end, there's a hint of immortality. Is that a spoiler?
I don't think so.
Hint of immortality and the idea that blood and certain kinds of blood are what is needed to keep Jason alive. What do you think?
I don't think they're vampires. I think they're like devil worshippers, because there's also a lot of
that's
like,
interesting.
References trying to be vague to like the statue like in their backyard.
They do have a statue.
And anytime like they kill anybody, they like show the statue, and it's always on a full moon. So it's more to me giving like demonic shit. Like they
interesting.
Sold their souls,
much like vampires or have they you paid. Think it's more like the prices Jason, like he made a pact with the devil,
you know, and it's like
I mean
it's that's like Toll Trolls, Boys Holes, that type shit.
That makes sense though, because I mean that's an interesting idea, because they live in this big mansion too, which is one of those you sell your soul to the devil, you get like all the earthly riches. I just think there's some stuff that happens at the end that you don't remember.
I think I do. And it makes me also think that they're not vampires. And I can't say what I have as evidence, because
I'm just going to say coat hanger.
I'm going to say people like that never die as my last last note. Robin says something like that.
Well, one way or the other, if it is a vampire film, I did think it was kind of an interesting play on it, using the blood transfusion machine, which you might think this is how modern vampires would do it.
Yeah, like, why would you need to do that if you sold your soul to the devil?
But also, Wirehanger could be demonic, too, because just because you're not a vampire doesn't mean you're not immune to, like, you know...
No, you're right. I was like, okay, part of that is maybe it's like eternal life with caveats.
Yeah, I mean, and that's also the whole point of selling your soul to the devil, is it's never that simple, right?
Sure, it's the monkey's paw.
You never, and also, what rumor?
I found it simple.
What rumor, too? Like, devil worshippers eat babies, you know?
And
that's true. That's true with vampires, too, though. The younger the blood, the better. But I'm also saying, you know, devil worshippers, they love their baby blood, apparently.
I do love you bringing in Hollywood it. I like the alternate theory. This is how murderers get off at trial.
What?
No, just the fact that you're bringing an alternate theory. Because I was like, it's vampires or what? But you're bringing
I mean,
devil
I'm
worship.
Just saying.
Yeah.
I mean that honestly. And it's
also Hollywood loves.
80s, early 80s Hollywood devil worship is
they
definitely.
They love to talk
that's
about
a good
that.
Point. Yeah.
Like, have you seen Maxine?
They love to be like, yep.
Who's seen
sex,
Maxine?
Devil anyway, worshippers, babies.
Speaking of, I didn't like think about this and think about Maxine.
I still haven't seen Maxine.
Oh.
I have to see Pearl, too. I've only seen X.
Oh, my God. You got to do it.
My confessional.
Yeah.
They're both
good.
They're all
good. I liked
good.
Them all.
Anyway, that's an interesting... Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
so,
it's true.
So, back to the topic. This may or may not be a vampire film, but you can decide for yourself if you feel inclined to watch it. I want to just talk about... Well, is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of, like, critical storyline... components?
I don't think so.
I mean, there's like the fact, what's the sister's name?
Bridget.
She doesn't want to kill Larry.
No,
that's, yeah,
she's
that's
into
a good
him.
Point. Yeah.
And she doesn't want to like do this anymore. Like, I feel like there's a lot of references to her like just kind of forlornly looking at her situation and being like, I'm going to be alone. I'm going.
Yeah, there's definitely a loneliness element of that character that she talks about.
Which is reminiscent of Welcome to Arrow Beach.
Yeah,
like,
a little bit. The brother-sister thing and the like.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between that dynamic in these two movies.
Which also brings me to my great my great revelation, which is all brothers are named Jason. Because we have a Jason here, Jason in Arrow Beach, and then Jason in True Blood. And that's
sure
all the things
more.
That have ever been made. So
yeah, it's all three.
Jasons.
Was Jason from Friday the 13th someone's brother?
I think he's an only child.
He is an only child, because that's the whole significance of how painful it was for
that's
him to
why,
die.
That's why, Mrs.
Because it was her
Bory's,
rainbow baby.
Mrs. Bory's, like, yeah.
And those fucking
we got some spoilers
horny,
for
horny teens boned and let that kid drown, which is, that is just fucked up.
True.
Why? Why?
Okay, I just want to talk about actor cameos really quick.
Oh,
so, Linnea Quigley, This was actually on the Linnea Quigley shelf at Movie Madness, but she's only in the film for about 30 fucking seconds, I think.
I love how they do that. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's happened to us before. And so we've talked about Linnea Quigley before. She was in Fatal Games, which we talked about on episode 2, and in Colobus. Mm-hmm. And she is a renowned scream queen, starring in films such as Return of the Living Dead, Night of the Demons, Silent Night, Deadly Night, and many more. But this film was actually before she broke out in the horror genre. This is kind of one of her first features. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Then we have Christopher McDonald, Shooter McGavin, which we accidentally did a Shooter McGavin double feature back-to-back with this episode and the last episode. He's an interesting hunk in this movie. I thought he did a great job. What did you think about Christopher McDonald's performance? And
he was so cute with his curly hair when he was young, but it wasn't just a double feature because we watched it in Olympia, like we said. But after we watched it, we just turned on whatever, you know, hotel cable, and Happy Gilmore was on.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And so then we were like, oh, my God, Christopher McDonald. Anyway, when he was young, he was a weird babe, and I liked the look.
Yeah, what did you think? You're not into Christopher McDonald?
I don't remember him movie.
In the last movie was my movie that we didn't like, and
he did a voice. Yeah.
Oh, he was the cop.
Yeah, he was the, like, main detective.
Remember how, like, nobody sounded like who they were, and that was one of the things that was, like, what an interesting choice. Well,
I was, like, thinking to myself, I was like, who even was he? And yeah, he was Terry?
Yeah.
He was Terry.
He was, like, yeah, the guy with the girlfriend that gets boned.
With the curly,
and then
cute
he bones Robin. I mean, like, he's not ugly, but he's not, like, he's not, I don't know, he's not weird-looking enough for me.
Yeah.
He's just not weird-looking enough.
He's just the right amount of weird-looking for me and Cody. We were both like, dang, Christopher.
Well, why don't you invite him over and marry him, okay?
Now he looks normal.
Now he's a normal.
Well, yeah, weird. He, like, aged normal.
Apologize to Christopher.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he's probably feels, like, better. People like to age normal. You know what I mean?
You don't know.
Yeah.
I've aged normal. That's what happened to me. I used to look weird. Now I look normal.
Anyway, I had never seen him as a young man. I thought he was a good looking dude. And, you know, made me appreciate him a little bit. Because I feel like he played a different character than he normally does. Like a grumpy old man nowadays. He's always like mildly villainous or something.
Yeah, he's a villain a lot. And he was a hero in this. Or a victim.
Yeah, victim. But just kind of like an aw shucks nice kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He liked to get wrecked.
Yeah, everybody's like getting wrecked. We're going to bring back the phrase getting wrecked.
I'm trying to. I'm going to work on it. Yeah. So before thoughts and feelings, anything else y'all clocked in this that you want to...
clocked always.
It's back.
Oh, yes. I forgot chloroform. One of my... Yes, chloroform.
Chloroformed was used in this.
Somebody got chloroformed in this movie, and it made me like, remember how that used to just happen all the time in movies and TV shows? Did it happen in real life? And B, was it one of those things that you could just get at the hardware store, like cyanide, or mostly cyanide is what I was thinking about. Like so was it one of those things where it was a real thing where you could get it? It was possible, or is chloroform like a quicksand situation where it's like it never happened to anyone, but it happened in every movie in the 80s?
Are you telling me quicksand isn't real?
I think it's real, but I don't think it does what it does in like the never ending story.
It's one of my biggest fears. Chloroform isn't one of my biggest fears.
Do you know what I mean? Like, is chloroform, was it? Just like you could go into the drugstore and buy it and soak your hanky in it and knock a broad out. And so that's why it was in so many things. Or was it like one of those overdone things like quicksand?
Yeah.
That's my question. And I haven't done any research because I had a very taxing week. So there you go.
I can look it up if chloroform.
We dragged a couple random guys into a conversation.
Oh, we talked
about
to some guys in the bar. And they... both thought that it was one of those hardware store available things.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we shall find out.
Yeah.
Okay. Thoughts and feelings. Anybody want to go first?
Do you want to go first since it was your movie, or is that
okay? Like, I'll go first.
Yeah.
So I thought this movie was actually well made, which was kind of a surprise for me because I was expecting it to be a bit rough around the edges for some reason, and it was higher quality than I anticipated. I thought the acting was pretty solid, solid enough to carry a storyline that was heavy on that relationship drama and not just like a bunch of people running around getting stabbed or something. Mm-hmm. So that was a plus. I enjoyed the look of the film. As I noted, there were definitely some camera shots that feel like 80s slasher, even though this is very much not a slasher film. So the look was cool. The music was cool. It was kind of like a lot of vibes, and I really liked how the characters were always talking about getting wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have this, well, this nice little place we can go to. How's that sound?
Sounds great. You want to get wrecked?
Yeah, sure.
But in terms of critique, it moved a bit slow for me in points, and I kind of felt like there was a lack of outright horror, which I would have liked to seen a bit more horror and a bit less of the relationship sex drama, maybe. But despite that, I thought those moments were done pretty well. So overall, I thought this was an interesting film, better than I expected, but certainly not perfect by any means.
Yeah. I thought it looked really cool from the very beginning. Like, the opening credits look cool. I love movies where you get to see Los Angeles, like the Hollywood Hills, before it's like the way things are now. And there's like open spaces. I thought it was just a lot of fun too. Yeah, I was worried at the very beginning that it was just going to be like some kind of weird erotic thriller because of the quantity of candles, candelabras. I was like, oh shit, we're going to have a like dripping wax kind of experience. But yeah, I thought it was more well done than it had a right to be, especially hearing how low the budget was too.
Yeah, pretty low budget. Even for the 80s, I think $40,000 is pretty low.
The acting was fine.
Yeah.
Like, nobody fucked it up. Yeah, I just thought it was kind of a weird, like, the riding a guy like a bull kind of thing. I was like, this is just a weird fucking movie. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it did move slow. Like, there were many times where, like, I just skipped, like, 10 seconds.
What? You
because,
bastard.
I'm sorry, because it would just be the same cut. I'd be like, okay, I get the picture here.
Oh, with the, like, photography?
Yeah, like, yeah. With some mm-hmm. of that stuff, I was like, mm-hmm. okay, like, she's riding him like a bull.
Right.
Great. But great. Everyone was really hot. No.
The wife,
except
especially.
For Larry. Larry was ugly.
Larry's a dud.
He was super ugly. And of course, he cheated on his wife. Ugly guy. Ugly troll. But I mean, I love drama. So I loved the drama. And I agree with what you guys are saying. Like, visually, it looked really good. And I think, like, I'm impressed by the budget not being like that much. And I feel like the camera work was solid. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have any critiques about any of, like, way the movie was filmed or any, like, technical elements. And also, no one acted bad.
Yeah.
That's true. But I also kind of agree it's not, like, perfect. And, well, I think there were a lot of, like, interesting ideas explored. And it seemed kind of like it came at a time where this was new and up and coming, like, this type of idea. There's not a lot going on. You know, there's not, like, a lot going on. And I didn't feel like there was much for me at stake other than, like, I just want Robin to leave her fuck-ass husband.
Right.
Like, that's
no.
really how I felt.
She's the hero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's who you're rooting for the whole time.
And I have an answer about chloroform.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you, like, talked about, like, chloroform, like, being used and what. But, like, it was a popular anesthetic before people realized how toxic it was. But the reason why it's so common in films is because it's such, like, a obvious visual thing. Like,
you put it on
when you see someone like do that, you know instantly. It's like, oh, they chloroformed them.
That makes
so
sense.
So it's just like visual short. It says like Gemini. Shout out Gemini, the AI overview for Google.
For fuck's sake.
It says it's a visual shorthand.
Are we gonna have to put an AI tag?
It's
on
a dramatic
our
effect.
Podcast?
It's for dramatic effect, suspense and mystery, and like outdated knowledge.
That does
reason.
Make sense. It's like a visual cue that someone's going to be knocked out.
Yeah, and I guess it was used enough, especially during World War II, where, like, it was just, like, people know. Like,
interesting.
Knew. Because it was, they did that to like knock people out.
So it's like a surgical anesthetic.
Yeah, it was like an easy way to knock people out, so you could like, you know, pull a bullet out of them without them like screaming or squirming, you know, type stuff.
And you could put a prod in your trunk.
And you could also do that, and that's what they did on their free time.
Cool.
That's what they did. The end. Sorry, that was kind of bad. My bad.
Okay, I wanted to end our thoughts and feelings section with a quote from Kurt Loder, because whenever you have an opportunity Kurt Loder, you'd have to do it. He was writing for Rolling Stone, apparently, at the time, and he called the film a bizarre obscurity that, by any prevailing critical standpoint, completely lives up to its plotline's utter lack of promise, an inert and inscrutably obsessive film. What? What does that
so
even mean?
So many big words. Inscrutably? I mean,
Kurt Loder will never change. Do you remember how that's how he talked?
What a load of bullshit is what I have to say. You big loader.
Do you know who he is? No. He was like one of the early MTV VJs, and he was always like,
he was like the news guy too.
He would do like 10 more words than you need to say the thing, but it was great because as a kid, you'd be like, well, now I'm going to look up, what does leonine mean?
Did he actually use that word?
I don't know. I just made it up.
She remembers the words he said.
No, I don't. But I'm just saying, like, what
no,
is,
I don't.
What is demystified? You know, like, you're a kid and you're like, what? He'd be like, the performance given.
You have a crush on Kurt Loder.
No, he was just a
you got
Charlie
a crush on him?
Smart man. You know? Anyway, that's great.
You want to bone him.
Okay, let's do.
Fuck you.
Let's do an obscurity rating on this cum dumpster.
Oh.
It's true.
All right.
Oh.
IMDb votes 850.
That's so little.
So am I.
That's what you said. She
I'm
said.
The littlest one.
IMDb said, critics, 18.
Oh, wow.
Rotten Tomatoes reviews, a big fat zero
wow.
there. And availability streaming, there's 6 places you can watch it right now, according to what I've found, and it does have that Blu-ray release, as noted. So all in all, we're at a 6.5, so not too bad. I think maybe the availability of this after the Blu-ray release lessened the obscurity because it's easier to find, but definitely not a movie that a lot of people have seen, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's vote time.
I hate this time.
Get your voting pens out and get ready to vote. Here we go. On the count of 3. Thumbs up or thumbs down. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I was feeling not nervous, and that's why, because I... Yeah.
Okay, so here is the results. We had 2 thumbs down, 1 thumb up. Who wants to reveal what their thumb was?
Up, man. I just thought it was a blast.
I was a down, which makes
Buggy a down as
well.
You didn't think it was a blast? I just thought it was a fucking blast.
I thought it was really interesting. I thought there were some really cool elements about it. But when it was all said and done, I felt like it just didn't do quite enough for me to call it a gem. I don't know if I'd write home about it, you know?
Oh, I just thought it was a blast.
I feel like it fell flat. It wasn't like bad. Like I didn't have a bad time. I wasn't like, damn, I hate this movie. I was just like,
no, you just skip forward.
I skipped through the bowl thing because it was boring. And I was like, okay, they're just going to do this for 5 minutes,
but
by the way.
But they had body paint
lasted
on. You didn't find it to
for
be like...
5 minutes. It was so boring.
We like, were just like, damn. Well, we were together and we were laughing.
Like, it was just boring.
So this movie actually has a pretty low score on IMDb, which is why I was worried about watching it. Because I was like, oh, this might really suck. But... it was better than I expected, and from the critic reviews I've read, it seems like there are a lot of people that have love for this movie, so, yeah.
I'm not alone.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
No, you're not alone.
It's not like a complete turd, it's a soft one, you know?
Yeah, it's a soft turd.
Because it's not, like, that bad. Like, I'd watch it again, probably, in the background, doing homework.
The end is kind of cool. Stick around for the end.
That's what I'm saying.
It's pretty dope.
Okay, we did our business, and now it's time for special time.
Special time!
Our favorite time.
So special time this week. I just wanted to have a really quick conversation about horror literature, also known as books.
Heck yeah.
Read a book, bitch.
Yeah, because as big of a horror fan as I am, I haven't read that many horror novels, and I don't know why. It's just not really my thing when it comes to reading. Is reading horror? I like movies. But I just finished a book, actually, called The Devil Crept In by Anya Allborn, which is set in Oregon. I guess you could say rural Oregon, but based on the time period of this book, it probably was more rural, but now all the towns they talk about are basically the suburbs.
Yeah.
It has a murder mystery disappearing kid story at its core, but it kind of turns into something else as the book goes on. Beth read it after me, and I think we were both lukewarm on it at best, right? Or you were...
She was upset.
You hated it.
I would say less than lukewarm, yeah.
You were like Luke Skywalker.
I was Luke below ground walker.
Mm.
Not great. In the sky.
You're Luke Perry.
Oh, rip. Dude, that's too on
Wait,
point.
Where's
the guy? So he is below ground.
Oh, shit.
That was a good accidental zinger he threw in there.
I mean, here's what I think about horror fiction. I've read some good. I think books affect me a lot more than movies, so that's part of it. And maybe that's why you haven't read so much, don't you? I think maybe. When you read...
But I don't know how to read.
Oh my gosh, shut the fuck up. It is hard when you don't know how. But I think books, for me, are so much more affecting than movies because I take them in a different way.
Yeah.
And so that book made me really upset and mad, and I wish that I didn't go through that experience. But a lot of people feel that way about horror movies, and I don't have that. But I've read other horror. I've read some. Buggy's dad's really into horror fiction, so I've read a few that I enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, this got me thinking, like, what horror books have I actually read, and do I have any favorites? And I actually do, so I thought I'd list a few of my favorite novels in the horror genre and then hear what y'all have on your list. So here it goes. Number one, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Nice.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Awesome, dude.
So not only is this probably my favorite horror novel, but it's also one of my favorite books of all time. I just really love that book.
I don't know if I knew that. I've read it a few times.
I've read it a few times, too. And it's just, I love the way it's structured with the letters. And I don't know, it really works for me. So I like that book a lot. I remember liking The Shining when I read that as a kid. It's been a long time, though. And then there's a newer book called Head Full of Ghosts by Paul Tremblay, which if you haven't read it, I definitely recommend it. But here's a question. Is House of Leaves a horror novel?
Oh, yeah, kind of, yeah. I feel like we've seen so many horror movies that I think have been influenced by it.
Because I really like that book, but then I couldn't decide, does it fit as a horror novel?
It kind of is, but it's
too long.
Yeah. I think she's actually onto something because there's like a form. I mean, Stephen King obviously wrote The Stand, and what's the other really long one?
It's really long.
It's really long.
He has a lot of them, but it's really long.
Those are the two long ones.
And he
has
The Gunslinger, which is like a series, but it's pretty long.
Is that horror though?
It is. Yeah, it's like sci-fi horror, but there's some weird shit going on there.
So it's funny, as we were talking about this, I didn't actually think about Stephen King at all. But The Shining is one of my favorite horror books, or maybe books. And I also think that maybe all this... I read so much. When I was like 12, I read every book he'd written up to that point. And maybe that's why I like horror movies. The thing about Stephen King, though, is you get like... You always get a sort of happy ending, right?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. At the end, you fucking come all over the book. Yes, Cody. No, but like he does give you that, right? Like he gives you like a little piece of something where it's like,
yeah,
at least the like this boy and girl escaped together, or this one person that was the underdog made it, or and so I think maybe that's why I struggle with it a little is like
I've read
some stuff that your dad recommended and I just can't.
Well, what's the other Stephen King book with like the small town and the vampire?
Oh, that's Salem's Lot, which is a really good.
I like Salem's Lot quite a bit.
Yeah, me too. I like Salem's Lot. I mean, I loved a lot, like all the early ones, you know. Needful Things, is that a short story maybe? Yeah, Salem's Lot, The Shining. I mean, I liked The Stand too. I read that. That's probably, you know, that's the first, like, I was like, I read a long book when I was like 12. Nice. And it was that. What about you? You've read more contemporary stuff.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's like my favorite genre of book besides romance. Those are like the two things
I give
a shit about. Like, those are the only two things for both media and, well, that counts as media. So, like, literary media and like film. So, I have a lot that I like. And I don't really know, because it's the same thing with horror movies, like what constitutes it. It's kind of like debatable for like, you know, there are like books that I've read that I really enjoy that I think have a lot of horrifying moments, but are more like dramas. But some, like one, this is a series that like really sticks out to me that I think everyone should read because it's really good. That also I love and was definitely formative for me is the Monstromologist series.
Oh, I read those. Those were great.
They're like, it's really good. It's by, I think Rick Yancey is my name.
Yeah, that's
name.
Right. It's like young adult, but you should read those.
They were really good. And I remembered they were like one of the first books, like book series. It was one of the first series I really fell in love with. And they're pretty violent too. Like they're very scary. There's like
a mystery kind of
a long plot that like kind of underlines it. But then every book there's a different really messed up monster, and like really bad stuff happens to people. It's a very like dark story, and also it's very like it's kind of like gothic and like very, I don't know, like what's the word, like melancholy.
It has a feeling like Dracula. It's like the same kind of like what's his fucking face, the investigator.
Oh my god, Helsing.
Yeah, it's like there's Van a Helsing. Main character is a Van Helsing thing,
but he's also crazy. He's right. Like more crazy. Well, yeah, but like in a different way.
I had a light bulb. I don't mean this is Cody's special time though, but Peter Straub, Ghost Story. That book made me love horror.
I've never read that.
Oh, what? And he also wrote Julia, you know, that became a movie. Yeah. And I mean, both have been made. I think Ghost Story might have even been made into a movie than once.
Yeah, at least twice.
Yeah. No, there's like an old one and a newer one.
Oh, and like Sleepover. Do you remember like those types of books?
Yeah, R.L. Stein.
R.L. Stein too. Oh, like that's like Goosebumps. A big gateway. Like I read just, all of
when
them.
When you said this, I was like thinking about new stuff. But yeah, Peter Straub.
Okay, I'll add it to my book list.
Sleepover.
Ghost Story is so fucking good.
It takes me 2 years to read one
Not
book.
Not this book. It'll take Any you book. 3 days.
There's a lot of good like underrated young adult horror books that I think should be looked into. Like Sleepover, that's considered a young adult horror book. There's a lot of ones I read like that. Goosebumps, that The Hitchhiker, stuff like that. That was like meant for.
I know, we're all looking at the bookshelves now. We're all like, oh my god, what's on the bookshelf?
Because there's just a lot of stuff like
things
that.
I don't think about as being horror. Yeah,
that were really good.
Yeah, I recommend Ghost Story.
Okay,
both I'll of check you. It out. You haven't read it either?
Probably not.
I'm sure there's a copy here at your dad's.
Your dad has one because he likes that guy.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, we talked about books. Books are great.
Read a book.
Awesome. You don't have to only watch movies. You can read books.
I think books are a great way.
Or you could go out in the streets and protest. And
and yeah, shout out to everyone who did that. Yeah. There's more good people than bad.
Still more of us than them.
Everyone who stood up and did that, you guys are amazing. Love and support.
That's right.
To get serious for a second, for real, love and support, you know.
That's right.
You guys are great. Amazing people.
Buggy's up next. Do you have anything on deck?
I don't really. I mean, I don't know. I have like, I'll probably find some like weird genre I want to try to like find a good horror movie on. Still hoping to find a good like Southern Gothic thing or like Southern thing. I'm into that right now. I know what my special time's going to be, but I'll like keep that. I'll keep that in the belt.
In the belt? She going to keep it in the belt.
I'm going to keep that on my belt. To pull it out later.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay, it's going to be a surprise.
It's a surprise.
Nothing wrong with a surprise. Sorry, Tom.
You won't get to watch it before.
He's in Shanghai.
Oh, yeah, he's busy. I just thought he does that, but it must not be him. Sorry, Tom.
Bob.
That's okay.
It's Bob. Sorry, Bob.
Well, happy 27th episode. Hopefully we don't all perish before 28th.
That's very I feel like you're planning something, and that's what's scary.
I'm always planning something.
You are. That's what you're scheming.
Okay, happy gem hunting.
Woo.
Take her easy.
Dirt dogs on a gem hunt.